Chapter 10, Voting and Elections. Why it matters. The right to vote is a major responsibility of citizenship. By voting, citizens can influence all levels of government, as well as the laws under which we live. Yet many Americans do not exercise this fundamental right and responsibility of our democratic way of life. Big Ideas. Section 1. Who can vote? The right to vote is one of the fundamental rights of citizens in a democratic society. Voting is a basic political right of all U.S. citizens who meet certain qualifications set by law. Section 2. Election campaigns. A successful democracy is built on an informed electorate. The success of an election campaign depends on the people who organize it. Section 3. Paying for election campaigns. A successful democracy is built on an informed electorate. The sophisticated vote-getting techniques that candidates use have made campaigning very expensive. Section 1. Who can vote? Real-world civics. Wheelchairs can help many people with disabilities live more independent daily lives. However, if you are disabled, can you get out and vote? Polling places have been accused of not being disabled-friendly. The Constitution promises everyone the right to vote, regardless of race, color, gender, or age, as long as they are 18. It is up to each state to find ways to make polling places accessible for all voters. Despite the Help America Vote Act of 2002, some people still face obstacles to voting. Organizations at the state level work to help these voters overcome such obstacles. Qualifying to vote. Main idea. The right to vote is the foundation of American democracy. Civics and you. Many of you will have the opportunity to vote for the first time in the not-too-distant future. As you read, think about why so many people have sacrificed so much to gain the right to vote. Voting is an important right of American citizenship. Without it, citizens would not be able to choose the people who will run their government. Voting is also a major responsibility. Those who do not vote are failing to carry out a civic responsibility. They are also handing over their share of political power to voters whose views they may oppose. President Franklin D. Roosevelt reminded Americans of the importance of voting when he said, "Let us never forget that government is ourselves. The ultimate, fundamental rulers of our democracy are the voters of this country." Early restrictions. During the early years of our nation, most voters were white, adult males, and property owners. People often barred from voting included white adult males who could not afford to buy property, women, African American males, Native American males, and people under 21 years of age. Today, however, property ownership is no longer a consideration, and the U.S. Constitution states that no state may deny the right to vote because of race, color, gender, or age, if the person is at least 18 years old. Most states deny individuals convicted of serious crimes the right to vote until they have served their prison sentences. In most states, you must be registered to vote. To be eligible to vote, you must be at least 18, a resident of the state for a specified period, and a citizen of the United States. Voter registration. Most states require registration at least 25 days before an election. In a few states, however, the deadline is later, 10 or even fewer days before the election. Registration requirements vary. Registration applications may be obtained from county offices. Some states make the process easier, permitting registration by mail or offering more convenient times and places for in-person registration, such as allowing registration at public libraries or high schools. How to register? The National Voter Registration Act requires states to let people register when they renew their driver's licenses. Citizens may also mail in registrations or register at various state and welfare offices and agencies that serve people with disabilities. Registration forms ask for your name, address, age, and often your party preference. You may register as a member of a political party or as an unaffiliated voter. If you register as a Democrat or a Republican, you may vote in primary elections in which you choose candidates for the general election. To register, first-time voters must show proof of citizenship, address, and age using a driver's license or birth certificate. Voters are then assigned to an election district. Reading check. Identifying. What requirements must you meet to qualify to vote? Steps in voting. Main idea. Voting is a basic political right of all U.S. citizens who meet certain qualifications set by law. Civics and you. Once you take the initiative to vote, there is a process you must follow in order to cast your ballot. Once the campaign is over, it is up to the voters to decide who will win or lose. On election day, voters go to the polling place in their precincts to cast their votes. A polling place is the location where voting is carried out, and a precinct is a voting district. Polling places are usually set up in town halls, schools, fire stations, community centers, and other public buildings. At the polls, polling places are generally open from early morning until 7 or 8 p.m. When you first arrive, you can study a sample ballot posted near the entrance. A ballot is the list of candidates on which you cast your vote. Once inside, you write your name and address and sign an application form at the clerk's table. The clerk reads your name aloud and passes the form to a challenger's table. A challenger, there are challengers representing each party, looks up your registration form and compares the signature on it with the signature on your application. If the two do not appear to match, the challenger may ask you for additional identification. When the challenger is convinced that you are eligible to vote, he or she initials the application form and returns it to you. Casting your vote. You then go to the voting booth where you hand the application form to an election judge. Judges oversee the operation of the voting booths, ensuring that everyone votes in secret and helping voters who are physically challenged, elderly, or unable to read. Types of voting machines. You will cast your ballot by using a voting machine. The two most common types are the punch card machine and the lever machine. Because election methods are left to the states, the kinds of voting machines used vary widely. Whatever machine you use, you will usually have a ballot with the candidates' names listed according to their political party and the office they are seeking. Butterfly ballot. It is always important to read the ballot carefully. In the 2000 presidential election, many voters in Florida were confused by the butterfly ballot, a paper ballot in which opposing candidates were listed across from each other instead of vertically. The 2000 election in Florida also proved that some machines were more reliable than others. Punch card ballots. Punch card ballots, in which voters punched a hole next to the name of a candidate, were run through machines and misread much more often than computerized, scanned ballots. Since the 2000 election, many states are converting to upgraded voting machines. The secret ballot. All types of voting machines allow voters to cast a secret ballot. We recognize the secret ballot as a protection of our right to make our electoral choices unhindered and without fear. Some machines also allow voters to vote for a straight ticket, which means voting for all the candidates in one political party. If you choose some candidates from one party and some from another, you are voting a split ticket. You may even decide to cast a write-in vote by writing in the name of someone who is not on the ballot. Absentee voting. Citizens who cannot get to the polls on election day can vote by absentee ballot. People who know they will be out of town that day, those who are too sick to get to the polls, and military personnel serving away from home often use absentee ballots. Voters must request an absentee ballot from their local election board sometime before election day. They mark this ballot and return it to the election board. On election day, or shortly thereafter, election officials open and count the absentee ballots. Counting the vote. When the polls close, election workers count the votes at the polling place and take the ballots and the results, called returns, to the election board. The board then collects and counts the returns for the entire city or county. If the voting machines are not computerized, gathering all the returns and tallying the results can take several hours or longer. Then the board sends the returns to the state canvassing authority. A few days after the election, the state canvassing authority certifies the election of the winner. In a major election, the news media and party workers try to predict winners as soon as possible. One way they do this is to ask a sample of voters leaving selected polling places how they voted. This is known as an exit poll. Through exit polling, specialists can often predict the winners long before all the votes have been officially counted. The media and elections. Major television networks always devote or dedicate the entire evening to covering the vote during presidential elections. They use computerized predictions based on the past voting history of key precincts. Through this process, the media call winners of Senate, House, and governor's seats, as well as the electoral vote in the race for president. In some cases, the networks make these calls with as little as 10% of the vote counted. Their projections are usually correct, but some of the major networks were embarrassed by an early and incorrect call on the presidential vote in the 2000 election in the decisive state of Florida. Some political commentators have criticized these early projections. The predictions usually come when millions of Americans in the Western time zone have yet to vote, and the polls there are still open. These observers charge that such early projections may persuade great numbers of West Coast voters not to bother going out to vote. This not only reduces overall voter turnout, but also may affect the outcome of local, state, and congressional elections. Reading check. Explaining. What does it mean to vote a split ticket? Why your vote matters. Main idea. Through our vote, we directly participate in governing. Civics and you. Each person's vote counts. If you doubt it, think about how many elections have been decided by just a few votes. Registering is only one part of getting ready to vote. It is equally important to prepare to vote. It is important to stay informed about candidates and public issues. Newspapers, TV, radio, news magazines, and the Internet carry useful information. Other good sources include the Voters Information Bulletin, published by the League of Women Voters, literature distributed by each political party, and information published by interest groups such as the American Conservative Union or the AFL-CIO Committee on Political Education. Preparing to vote. As you read about candidates and the issues they support, read carefully to separate facts from opinions. Everyone has different reasons for supporting particular candidates. As you read about various candidates, answer the following questions to help you decide whom to support with your vote. Does the candidate stand for the things I think are important? Is the candidate reliable and honest? Does the candidate have relevant past experience? Will the candidate be effective in office? Does the candidate have a real chance of winning? Sometimes Americans vote for candidates even though they do not have a real chance of winning the election because they wish to show their support for a certain point of view. All the people who are eligible to vote are called the electorate. Each person's vote counts. If you doubt it, consider this. The 2000 presidential election was decided by about 500 votes in the state of Florida. In the 2006 midterm elections, which party took control of Congress was decided by a few thousand votes. Why some people do not vote? Despite the fact that voting gives Americans a chance to participate in their government, not everyone votes. Some citizens do not vote because they do not meet state voting requirements, or they have not re-registered after changing residences. Others do not think that any of the candidates represent their feelings on issues, or they think that their vote will not make a difference. Another reason is apathy or lack of interest. Even among those who are registered to vote, many fail to do so. Why some people do vote? The citizens who do vote share some characteristics. These citizens generally have positive attitudes toward government and citizenship. Usually, the more education a citizen has, the more likely it is that he or she will be a regular voter. Middle-aged citizens have the highest voting turnout rate of all age groups. The higher a person's income, the more likely he or she is to vote. Reasons for voting. There are important reasons to exercise your right to vote. Voting gives citizens a chance to choose their government leaders. It gives them an opportunity to voice their opinions on past performances of public officials. If voters are dissatisfied, they can elect new leaders. Voting also allows citizens to express their opinions on public issues. Reading check. Summarizing. What are two important reasons to exercise your right to vote? Section 2. Election campaigns. Real-world civics. Candidates on the campaign trail face long days, trip delays, meals at odd times, uncomfortable sleeping conditions, and lots of handshaking. Senator Hillary Clinton ran for president in 2008 in a tough primary race for the Democratic nomination. The road to the nominations is long. Campaigning often starts a year ahead of the first primary in New Hampshire, which is 2 years before the actual election. Types of elections. Main idea. There are different types of elections in the United States political system. Civics and you. Americans have been voting since the earliest colonial governments. As you read, identify the differences among the different types of elections. The Electoral College is part of the process that Americans use to select their president. Americans also vote in many other elections. There are about 500,000 elected officials in the United States. In addition, Americans have many opportunities to vote on issues or topics of concern, as well as candidates. Besides primary elections, there are three other types of elections in the United States: general elections, elections on issues, and special elections. General elections. Under the United States political system, every election is a two-part process. The first part is the nomination of candidates in a primary election. Primary races help to narrow the field of candidates. Then, in a general election, the voters choose candidates for various offices. General elections always take place on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. All seats in the U.S. House of Representatives and about one-third of the seats in the Senate are at stake in general elections every even-numbered year. Presidential elections occur every 4 years. In these elections, the ballot often includes candidates for governor, the state legislature, county government, and local offices. In some states, however, elections for mayor and other city offices take place in odd-numbered or uneven years. For all races except the presidential race, the candidate who wins most of the popular vote is elected to office. If an election is very close, the loser has the right to demand a recount of the votes. Occasionally, a disputed election cannot be resolved through a recount, and another election must be held. In the case of a national election, a dispute may be referred to Congress for settlement. If it is a presidential election and neither candidate wins a majority of electoral votes, the House of Representatives elects the president. This happened in the elections of 1800 and 1824. Voting on issues. In some elections at the state or local level, voters may decide on issues as well as candidates. The initiative, for example, is a way that citizens can propose new laws or state constitutional amendments. Citizens who want a new law gather signatures of qualified voters on a petition. If enough people sign the petition, the proposed law or proposition is put on the ballot at the next general election. The referendum is a way for citizens to approve or reject a state or local law. Citizens in more than half the states have the right to petition to have a law referred or sent back to the voters for their approval at the next general election. Special elections. From time to time, state or local governments also hold certain kinds of special elections. Runoff elections may be held when none of the candidates for a particular office wins a majority of the vote in the general election. The runoff is held to determine the winner. The recall is another type of special election. In a recall, citizens in some states can vote to remove a public official from office. Like the initiative, the recall starts with a petition. Voters may recall an official because they do not like his or her position on issues, or because the official has been charged with wrongdoing. Reading check, comparing. What is the difference between an initiative and a referendum? Presidential elections. Main idea. Presidential elections have three major steps. 1. Nomination of candidates. 2. The campaign. And 3. The vote. Civics and you. As you read, ask yourself, what issues are important for a candidate to address? Candidates for president begin organizing their campaigns long before the election. In the past, both major parties held national conventions in the summer of the election year to choose their candidates. Delegates came to these conventions from each state, the District of Columbia, and U.S. territories. These conventions were dramatic events full of behind-the-scenes negotiations. Backers of various candidates would move around the convention floor, promising future political favors to state delegations in hopes of stealing their votes away from a rival. The political dealings would be interrupted for suspenseful and colorful state-by-state roll call votes, to see if any contender had rounded up enough support to win the nomination. In recent years, however, the conventions have lost their main purpose, choosing the nominee. So much campaigning now goes on in the primary elections that by convention time, one contender has already wrapped up the nomination. The parties use the conventions mainly to kick off the campaign and to rally party members across the country for the work ahead. Campaigns. Presidential campaigns are usually in full swing by early September. Candidates travel across the country giving speeches, appearing on TV, and holding news conferences, even though there is seldom any real news to announce. Candidates may face their opponents in televised debates. They meet with state and local political leaders, and they give pep talks to lower-level members of the party who are working for them. Electoral votes and the states. For all races except the presidential race, the candidate who wins a majority of the popular vote, votes cast directly by the people, is elected to office. In a presidential race, the voters are actually electing people called electors, who hold electoral votes and are part of the electoral college system. In every state, a slate or list of electors is pledged to each candidate. The purpose of the popular vote in each state is to choose one of these slates of electors. The candidate who wins the popular vote in a state usually receives all of the state's electoral votes. This is called the winner-take-all system. The winning electors meet in their state capitals in December to cast the state's electoral votes for president and vice president. The electors send their votes to Congress, which counts them. Because every state has one elector for each of its U.S. senators and representatives, the total number of votes in the Electoral College is 538. Washington, D.C. has three electoral votes. The candidate who receives a majority of these votes, 270 or more, wins the election. Article 2, Section 1, established the Electoral College. It was a compromise measure. Some of the framers wanted the American people to have direct control over the new national government. Others strongly believed that the government must be able to function without having to give in to popular whims. The first group demanded a direct, popular election of the president. Their opponents pushed to have Congress name the president. The compromise was to have the legislatures in each state choose presidential electors. Today, the voters in each state directly choose the electors. Electoral College issues. Some people think that the Electoral College should be changed or eliminated. They charge that large states, such as California and Texas, which have many more electoral votes than smaller states, have too much influence in deciding the election. One candidate might win five or six small states and yet not receive as many electoral votes as the candidate who wins just one large state. If a candidate wins the largest number of popular votes in a state, that person receives all the state's electoral votes. Under the winner-take-all system, a candidate who loses the popular vote can still win the electoral vote and the presidency. This has happened four times in our nation's history, most recently in 2000. The winner-take-all system also makes it extremely difficult for third-party candidates to be represented in the electoral vote. Ideas for reform. There have been several suggestions for reform. Under one plan, electoral votes should be based on the percentage of the popular vote. If a candidate won 54% of a state's popular vote, for example, he or she would also get 54% of the electoral votes. Any change in the Electoral College system requires a constitutional amendment. Reading check. Inferring. When you vote for the U.S. president, for whom are you actually voting? Section 3. Paying for election campaigns. Real-world civics. Citizens take action when they believe in an issue. Doris Granny D. Haddock, 91, walked across the country to register voters and to protest the use of corporate money in political campaigns. Ms. Haddock, like many Americans, was concerned that within the current system, only the rich can run for office. Inspired by Haddock and others, Senators Russell Feingold and John McCain teamed up in 2001 to present to Congress the McCain-Feingold bill to limit the money spent on campaigns. Although it passed, the 2004 presidential election cost nearly $1 billion. Running for office. Main idea. Running for public office is the first step in the election process. Civics and you. Would you run for public office if given the chance? As you read, ask yourself, what are the reasons an individual runs for public office? Americans spend more than $3 billion on national, state, and local elections every four-year period. Former House Speaker Tip O'Neill once said, "There are four parts to any campaign: the candidate, the issues, the campaign organization, and the money. Without money, you can forget the other three." It takes a great deal of money to run a successful campaign for a major office today. Once candidates are nominated, they spend weeks and even months campaigning. The purpose of campaigns is to convince the public to vote for a particular candidate. Each campaign has a campaign organization. An organization for a local candidate may have only a few workers. Presidential campaigns, though, have thousands of workers. Campaign workers must acquaint voters with a candidate's name, face, and positions on issues, and convince voters to like and trust the candidate. Campaign workers use several techniques to accomplish their goals. Canvassing. When candidates or campaign workers travel through neighborhoods asking for votes or taking public opinion polls, they are canvassing. At the local level, candidates often go door to door to solicit votes and hand out campaign literature. At the national level, campaign organizations conduct frequent polls to find out how their candidates are doing. Endorsements. When a famous and popular person supports or campaigns for a candidate, it is an endorsement. The endorser may be a movie star, a famous athlete, a popular politician, or some other well-known individual. The idea behind endorsements is that if voters like the person making the endorsement, they may decide to vote for the candidate. Endorsements are a kind of propaganda technique. Propaganda is an attempt to promote a particular person or idea. Candidates use propaganda techniques to try to persuade or influence voters to choose them over another candidate. Advertising and image molding. Campaign workers spend much time and money to create the right image or impression for a candidate. Much of that money goes to advertising. Political advertisements allow a party to present only its candidate's position or point of view. They also enable a candidate to attack an opponent without offering an opportunity to respond. Candidates for a local election may use newspaper advertisements or posters, while state and national candidates spend a great deal of money advertising on television. Why? Television ads can present quick and dramatic images of a candidate and his or her ideas. Such television images tend to stay in the viewer's mind. Campaign expenses. The sophisticated vote-getting techniques that candidates use have made campaigning very expensive. Television commercials are a very effective way to win votes, but they cost tens of thousands of dollars per minute. Other campaign costs include airfare and other transportation, salaries of campaign staff members, and fees or payments to professional campaign consultants, such as public opinion pollsters. There are also computer, telephone, postage, and printing costs. A small-town mayoral race may cost only a few hundred or a few thousand dollars. A state legislative or congressional race may cost several hundred thousand dollars or more. In recent elections, spending for each seat in Congress has averaged about $1.5 million. Some congressional candidates spend $15 million or more. A presidential race can cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Reading check. Describing. What is the purpose of election propaganda? Financing a campaign. Main idea. Candidates spend considerable time and effort raising campaign funds. Civics and you. Have you read about campaign finance issues? As you read, think about questions you may have about campaign spending. The methods used to finance election campaigns have been established by congressional legislation and Supreme Court decisions. In recent years, a push to reform how candidates raise money has led to many changes in the law. Federal Election Campaign Act. In 1971, Congress passed the Federal Election Campaign Act, FECA, in an effort to place some controls on campaign financing. FECA and its amendments in 1974, 1976, and 1979 established many key rules for campaign finance. The law required public disclosure of each candidate's spending. It limited the amount, called hard money, that individuals or groups could donate directly to a candidate or a political party. It also tried to limit how much other individuals and groups could spend. Federal Election Commission. The 1974 amendment to FECA created the Federal Election Commission, FEC, an independent agency of the executive branch, to administer all federal election laws and to monitor campaign spending. All candidates and political parties must keep records of campaign contributions. Candidates are now required to report all individual contributions that exceed $200 to the FEC. Limiting contributions. In 1976, the Supreme Court ruled in Berkeley v. Valeo that the government, through laws like FECA, could set limits on campaign contributions because of its need to keep corruption out of elections. The court did find, however, that it was a violation of free speech to limit how much of their own money candidates could spend on their election campaigns. Public funding. FECA also set up public funding for presidential elections by creating the Presidential Election Campaign Fund. This fund allows taxpayers, by checking a box on their federal income tax return, to designate $3 of their annual taxes to go to the fund. In general, major party presidential candidates can qualify for some of this money to campaign in the primary elections if they have raised $100,000 on their own. After the national conventions, the two major party candidates can receive equal shares of money from the fund, so long as they agree not to accept any other direct contributions. Third-party candidates can also qualify for this funding if their party received more than 5% of the popular vote in the previous presidential election. Soft money and PACs. Most campaign money comes from private sources rather than public funding. These sources include individual citizens, corporations, labor unions, interest groups, and political action committees, PACs. PACs are organizations set up by interest groups, especially to collect money to support favored candidates. FECA limited direct donations from PACs and other private sources. In the late 1970s, complaints grew that campaign finance legislation was making fundraising difficult. Congress responded with new laws enabling political parties to raise soft money, unlimited amounts of money for general purposes, not designated to particular candidates. By law, this money was supposed to be used for general party-building purposes, such as voter registration drives or direct mailings on behalf of the party. Soft money could come from individuals or PACs. FECA placed no limits on these contributions, and in the 2002 national elections, they totaled about $500 million. Spending on media. There is also the issue of money spent by interest groups for radio and television ads that support the group's positions on issues. These ads do not ask people to vote for or against a specific candidate, but they might show a candidate's name or image. They are powerful tools for interest groups to help candidates they like. FECA placed no limits on how much money could be spent on such ads. A reluctance for reform. In response to these developments, Congress repeatedly discussed reforming campaign finance laws. Changes, though, were difficult to achieve. PACs gave most of their money to incumbents, politicians who have already been elected to office. As a result, many of these incumbent lawmakers were reluctant to change the rules in ways that might help their opponents in the next election. Campaign reform. Change came in 2002, however, when Congress passed legislation aimed at better controlling the money flowing into national campaigns. The Bipartisan Campaign Reform Act, also known as the McCain-Feingold Act, prohibits national political parties, federal office holders, and federal candidates from raising soft money. The law also places time restrictions on broadcasting political ads. Corporations, unions, and interest groups are banned from running ads aimed at a candidate for federal office within 60 days of a general election or 30 days of a primary election. Finally, the law raises the limits on hard money contributions, stating that candidates may collect up to $2,000 per donor in each election. Political parties can collect $25,000 per donor in each year. New law upheld. Critics of the new law immediately challenged it as a violation of the First Amendment rights of free speech. In 2003, the Supreme Court case of McConnell v. Federal Election Commission upheld all the major provisions of the McCain-Feingold Act as constitutional. The court stated that it was in the public interest for Congress to limit the size of campaign contributions. Without limits, there would always be the appearance that big donors were able to buy influence with policymakers in ways not available to ordinary citizens. The majority opinion, written by Justices John Paul Stevens and Sandra Day O'Connor, upheld the ban on corporations, unions, and interest groups from running advertisements for or against a candidate for federal office within a certain period of time before general and primary elections. The court also supported the McCain-Feingold Act's setting restrictions on campaign advertisements disguised as issue ads. Looking to the future, the court's decision set the rules for the 2004 elections and beyond. It will affect how candidates go about raising funds. For example, there will be a new emphasis on getting many small donations rather than a few large ones. As a result, the Internet will play a larger role in political fundraising. The Internet gives politicians and their supporters an inexpensive way to quickly reach millions of people who might be willing to make the smaller contributions. Reading check, identifying. How did the McCain-Feingold Act change campaign finance? Time reports. The machinery of democracy. With no national balloting system, the U.S. is a patchwork of voting methods. Unlike India and Canada, America does not have a national system for running elections or counting votes. That's because the Constitution left election procedures to the states. They, in turn, have passed the responsibility down to counties and cities, some 13,000 of them, which choose and pay for their preferred methods of counting ballots. The imperfect patchwork of voting methods in use around the U.S. causes hundreds of thousands of ballots to be discarded each year. About 2% of all votes in presidential elections are marked for more than one candidate, or for none, mostly as a consequence of voter confusion. Sometimes that confusion has serious consequences. In 2000, George W. Bush was declared president based on a 537-vote lead in Florida. Later, analysis revealed that Al Gore lost more than 6,000 votes, and the White House, because some Florida voters marked more than one name on Palm Beach County's butterfly ballot. On that ballot, the names of 10 presidential candidates alternated on two pages. Voters' confusion with ballot instruction and design and voting machines appears to have changed the course of U.S. history, concluded a post-election analysis by a group of newspapers. How Americans Vote, an Imperfect System. A look at the various methods used throughout the United States. 1. Optical scan. Percent who vote this way. 35%. How it works. Voters fill in rectangles, circles, ovals, or incomplete arrows next to their candidate. A computer selects the darkest mark as the choice. Pros, cons. Easy for voters to use, and double-marked ballots are immediately rejected, allowing voters to revise their ballots. But the equipment is expensive and can have problems reading sloppily marked forms. 2. Electronic. Percent who vote this way. 29%. How it works. Voters directly enter choices into the machine using a touch screen or push buttons. Votes are stored via a memory cartridge. Pros, cons. Though as easy as using an ATM, this technology is still fairly expensive. There is no paper trail in the event of a recount, and the machines are subject to programming error, malfunction, and tampering. 3. Punch card. Percent who vote this way. 14%. How it works. Voters insert blank cards into clipboard-sized devices, then punch the hole opposite their choice. Ballots are read by a computer tabulator. Pros, cons. An economical method, but holes are often incompletely punched. The dangling bits of cardboard, known as chads, can lead to inaccurate tabulation of votes. and the notorious butterfly ballot caused massive confusion among Florida voters in 2000. 4. Lever machine. Percent who vote this way. 14%. How it works. Each candidate is assigned a lever, which voters push down to indicate their choices. Pros, cons. Once the most popular form of voting, lever machines are simple to use, but heavy, old, and no longer manufactured. There is no paper trail if recounts are necessary. 5. Paper ballot. People who vote this way. 1%. How it works. Voters record their choices in private by marking the boxes next to the candidate and then drop ballots in a sealed box. Pros, cons. An inexpensive and straightforward method that dates back to 1889. Counting and recounting can be slow. Is there a better way of balloting ahead? A uniform ballot. Some think there should be a single ballot design for all federal elections. Same type, style, and size, with ballot marks in the same place. Move election day. Should it be a holiday or move to the weekend so more people don't have to squeeze in their civic responsibility around work? It's a nice idea, but voters might just take a vacation. Voting by mail. Oregon has tried this concept with mixed success. If the kinks can be worked out, though, it could relieve the crowding on election day and boost turnout by giving people more time to vote. Computerized voting. Some experts see elections being eventually held entirely over the Internet. Security problems have to be solved first, though. And what about voters who are not computer literate? Asterisk. Note. Figures are for the presidential election held in November 2004. Additional 7% is made up of voters in counties where more than one voting method is used. Sources: Election Data Services, Federal Election Commission.